This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for conversation with the founder of a New Orleans-based record label, info on an open call for visual artists, or conversation with a folk singer who has a passion for art, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. New Orleans-based Putumayo Records is celebrating 25 years this spring and expanding its business model to include streaming, children's books, and cultural travel experiences. They've been to Cuba and are planning excursions to New Orleans this month and Peru in September. The trips are personally curated by Putumayo founder, CEO Dan Storper. WWNO's Carl Lengel talked with Dan recently about New Orleans and Putumayo's music, books, and the trips.
Putumayo built its retail experience in kind of unusual locations. Can you explain a choice to use unconventional stores to get started?
Well, it really began because I owned a series of retail shops, and I was actually selling collections of clothing and handicrafts from around the world to about 600 boutiques when I was on my way back from a trip to Indonesia. Heard this African band in Golden Gate Park, and it led me back to New York to one of my stores where they were playing thrash metal music, and I got upset, so I started going into stores to find music to play in the stores, created these tapes that people started really falling in love with, I guess, the music, and were asking constantly, and I knew a guy who owned a record label, and I just proposed the idea of doing a series of compilations.
Why New Orleans as one of the choices originally?
I'd been coming down here for Jazz Fest every couple of years and actually came down the first time when I was in St. Louis at Washington University in 1970 for Mardi Gras. I was a Latin American studies major, done many, many trips to France and other places. So I liked the merging of cultures and, of course, loved the music. And so I married a woman from New Orleans and started coming back and forth back in 2004. Just before Katrina, we bought a house and, of course, had to deal with a lot of that stuff. And in fact, shortly before Katrina, we put an album out called New Orleans and decided to contribute all the proceeds from that album to artists and nonprofits that were doing good work. And so that became a big focus in the beginning. And then, of course, fell in love with more of the jazz and rhythm and blues and blues. So we did a series of albums focused on jazz and blues and other American roots music. Eventually, officially, about 3 years ago, moved the whole company here.
How do children's books fit into the mix?
The artist that does the album covers for Putumayo has been doing our children's album covers, and we've been very successful. And I met somebody who owns a company called Barefoot Books, and I've known her for now probably 20 years. And one day I thought, you know, we have an audience, retail audience, for these books that they're doing that are multicultural. Maybe we could start trying to distribute some of those. So with the Barefoot Books, we started distributing their World Atlas, Book of Children, their Spanish and English words and French and English words books, and gradually found our way back to kind of building and, in a sense, rebuilding a kind of marketplace for cultural kids' books. And I'm hoping to expand that to adult books as well.
Travel, how does that fit into the cultural relationship to the markets that you're dealing with?
We were going to release another album called Cuba, Cuba, that was going to essentially follow up the original Cuba album. So I approached Inside Cuba to just use the album to give away. And we started having this discussion and they proposed the idea, why don't we do a collaboration on trips? So we tested our first trip to Cuba that was music-based, but it obviously involves a lot more than that. Wonderful cultural excursions and history and great food. And so we did a very successful one in November of 2017, decided to do it again. We just had our second music-based trip to Cuba in November 2018, and now have a trip coming up to New Orleans in March.
What'll make this visit to New Orleans special?
We're arranging a number of private performances, you know, with some of the groups that we've always loved and promoted on our albums, you know, because these are small groups. This is not a big, massive number of people. We're talking about 25 or so people. I think one of the exciting things for me is marrying the experience of artists that we love, that we know are great performers, with venues where we think you can experience the sound the best possible way. So the hope is that, you know, with places that you know, like Snug Harbor or Preservation Hall or Palm Court Jazz Club, everyone knows of these places, but to try and coordinate in such a way where the right artists are playing, they'll spend a little time talking about their music, you'll have an intimate connection with the artists, and we're also taking them to view and see art and photography and other types of things that are part of the cultural lore and history of New Orleans.
So what are the current releases for the 25th anniversary?
We just released an album called Broadway Jazz, which actually includes several New Orleans artists. One of my favorites, Kermit Ruffins, but also Leroy Jones, another artist who actually will be performing during our New Orleans trip. And we started the 25th anniversary year with an album called New Orleans Party, which is a celebration of some of the fun, upbeat songs from New Orleans. So because I lived and worked in New York for a long time, I thought, you know, New Orleans Party, where I live now, and Broadway Jazz would have kind of a nice sense of a bookend to the 25th anniversary celebration.
Dan, thanks for stopping by and spending some time with us today.
Well, thank you, Carl. It's been a pleasure being here.
I don't stay out late. Don't care to go. I'm home about 8. Me and my radio. Ain't misbehaving. Saving all my love for you.
Kermit Ruffins, one of the New Orleans artists featured on Putumayo Records' new CD, Party in New Orleans, a release celebrating the label's 25th year. Carl Lengel spoke with Dan Stober, the company's CEO and founder, about its music, books, and travel excursions. Creative energy abounds in Palmer Park on a monthly basis. It is home to Arts Market New Orleans, the city's premier handmade market, where Louisiana and Gulf Coast artists display and offer for sale handcrafted artworks. It is presented by the Arts Council New Orleans and managed by the Louisiana Crafts Guild, and is currently seeking new vendors with an open call for visual artists of all mediums. Katie O'Dell manages the market. Katie, welcome to Inside the Arts.
Hi, thank you for having me.
In a relatively short time, Arts Market New Orleans has literally transformed Palmer Park. Take us back to the early days. The beginning of this journey, I believe, began 12 years ago?
Yes. So in 2007, in the aftermath of Katrina, when the city was reviving different areas, the Art Market started. And it's always been along Carrollton Avenue. It started as the Mid-City Arts Market that used to be near Juan's Flying Burrito near Canal Street in Carrollton. And, you know, for a while it was in City Park, and now it's in Palmer Park. It's really rejuvenated the whole park. And what's interesting about the park is that it's the meeting ground of a couple different neighborhoods, from Fountain Blue, Pigeon Town, Carrollton, the University area. So it's really brought a good energy, a creative energy to all those neighborhoods for the community.
What was the vision for the market?
To provide a place for artists, local Gulf Coast handmade artisans, to sell their work, be a fine art focused market versus other markets you might see, like the French Market, with more vintage and flea market type vendors, to really promote the handmade local economies.
And how has it grown over the years?
We have a database of probably over 300 artists that can participate in our monthly art market. We have, during the holiday markets, up to 130, 35 people vending. And on a typical Saturday, we have about 70 vendors. When the weather is nice in the fall, we definitely get more.
Let's talk about some of the artists that are represented at the market, and if you would describe some of their works.
Yeah, so we have mediums of all kinds, from fine art oil paintings to folk art, ceramics, functional ceramic to purely decorative ceramics, all sorts of different glassworks, jewelry, and many things between. Our artists come from all different backgrounds. There's one fine art painter who was a NASA physicist, Phil Sandusky. He is a painter. You may see him around town through the Arts Council doing plein air painting workshops. One familiar person to many New Orleanians is Chris Rose formerly of the Times-Picayune. He has joined the market as a painter. He's still writing, but he's also painting, and his work is folk art, untrained, but it's very cool. And he does a lot of collage work, too. We also have a lot of young people, which is very exciting for the first time, early 20s, that are joining the market. And they have a whole new outlook on the types of products that they are offering. Creative, functional products, beautiful, ethically made products. And we even have some young painters who are still in college that are now joining us. So that's exciting to see engagement from senior citizens to, you know, people just graduating college. A lot of our artists have a stronghold in the Lafayette area. And so they're now coming down, and that's an interesting cultural exchange, getting the Acadian crafts out there. The market gives the community an opportunity to get firsthand interaction with these creative types of people. It's very inspiring. We make art accessible to people, to art collectors, but also to people who aren't art collectors, people who are maybe just walking their dog in the park and stumble upon this market and they see something that inspires them and maybe they start collecting.
And now you have an open call for new vendors?
Right now, we are allowing all mediums. The only caveat is that if you are a jeweler, your deadline for your application is Monday, March 11th.
And the others have until when?
The others, we do rolling basis throughout the year. So applications will be accepted all year round for all other mediums. With jewelry, we tend to get a lot of applicants. There's a lot of great jewelers out there, but to jury them on a rolling basis is tough because we want a balanced market at the end of the day.
So who's eligible to apply and how does the application process work?
So the application is very easy. It's online. You submit images of your work. If you're able to fill out a contact form online, you should be able to fill out the application. And anyone who is a Louisiana, Mississippi, or Alabama resident is encouraged to apply.
Arts Market New Orleans manager Katie Oakdale, thanks so much.
Thank you.
The market takes place on the last Saturday of every month in Palmer Park at Carrollton and Cleburne Avenues. Interested applicants can get more info by emailing artsmarket@artsneworleans.org. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNN, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. Folk singer, songwriter, and guitarist Spencer Boren is gearing up for another concert. Boren talked with us last month as musicians gathered for a benefit concert to help him with his courageous battle with cancer. He is performing with his band, the Whippersnappers, and exhibiting his artwork in a concert presented by the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation. Spencer, welcome back.
Well, thank you, Diane. I feel like the luckiest man alive to be here twice in a month.
How are you?
I feel very good, you know. I mean, I've got it. I'm dealing with it. I'm in remarkably good shape, I think. I really do feel that way.
A lot of musicians showed support for you last month. How was the concert at Tipitina's?
The concert was incredible on many levels. I mean, the music was great. We had multi-generational music. My son Andre produced the show. And honestly, when Dave Malone from the Radiators started the very last set only 5 minutes late, it was a miracle. We all watched it. But mostly that room was so full of love. Everyone in that room was in love with everyone else in that room. I have never seen anything like it. And to be the, you know, the focus, it was powerful juju. I feel a whole lot better.
Well, that's great. And you're performing again, but this time you're wearing another of your many hats. You're performing in concert, but you also have a passion for art. Who knew?
Who knew? Even I suppressed it for many years.
So tell us how your love of art developed.
I think, Diane, when I was like 13 or something, when I was really young, I've probably considered myself a visual artist, and then I met the guitar. I think like many creative people, the art and the music, sometimes that goes well together, but music just swept me off my feet. Folk music did. And so art just kind of became something I could appreciate. I liked art. I've studied art. I would buy books about art, and I would, you know, do a lot of graphic work. But in, I think about 2000, maybe 1999, I had a record made, and I had a picture I wanted to use, and it wouldn't work in the square format of a CD. And I was at a loss, and I went to a little art show at the Louisiana Music Factory. And I saw these tiny little altars to blues singers, B.B. King, Jimmy Reed, Aretha Franklin, whoever. And I found them so charming, and like you do so often in a museum, I said to myself, I could do that. And I went home and I found a little square box and I started making this cover. And at this point, you know, I'm addicted to this.
They resemble shadow boxes.
That's a good word for them. They're three-dimensional. They're made in like cigar boxes or boxes about that size. It could vary from smaller to larger. They're collaged 100%. Maybe I will build shelves or create some environment, some mystical environment inside the three-dimensional box. But each one of them is like a world unto itself.
You have some that are as big as an 8x11 sheet of paper. You have some that are as small as a pen box.
Yes, and I have some that have lights in them, and some of them have moving parts. It's I don't try to explain it. It's a real obsession.
And they really draw the viewer in. Some are mystical, some are spiritual. Wow. There's a little magic going on there.
For me, too. I don't understand it. I don't claim to know why I know when they're done or how I know when I've overdone them and I have to go back again. And there are some that don't get finished, but I make them on the road, so they have to fit in my suitcase.
You brought several of them today that you have placed all around the studio. Is there a favorite?
Well, there are some that I think I respond to more than others, but no, not a favorite exactly. It's interesting to me to watch them develop. It's been, what, almost 20 years I've been doing it. And so, you know, they've become what I call reliquaries. And they are like the place where I can hold my memories or my experiences or imagined experiences. I'm picking up pieces, boxes, found objects, the things I need to create these boxes. I'm picking them up as I'm traveling. I have one that I did in Ireland. I remember exactly where I was when this certain rock was picked up or when a certain piece of glass was found on the beach. They're like diaries in that regard.
We here in New Orleans don't really know this side of you, but I understand you've had exhibits on the road.
I have had 7 museum exhibits. I don't sell these, so no. But very often I will do workshops with this art where I will provide all the materials and the technique, and then we will just go deep, and it can be a whole room full of people. It could be 10 people. It could be, I've had up to 40 people doing it. And so in these residencies, part of that would be an exhibition and a concert and maybe a radio show and, you know, whatever might be folded into it. So that's how it started. And one university did it, and then another university wanted me to do workshops. And a very notable gallery in my home state of Wyoming, the Nicolaysen Gallery, was. I was very honored to be there in my hometown. Anyway, it's been amazing to see the artwork that I'm making for, you know, for nobody really, find itself on walls of museums and people being really moved by it. It moves me.
What's been the reaction from educators?
Oh, they just absolutely love it. I have one principal out in Montana who came into the room and watched what we were doing. And then he said, I just love what you do. You come in, you're a total stranger. First, I play a concert. So they He says, establish the cool factor. Then we go into the art room, and I show him the materials, and I explain what we're doing, which is abstract. And he says, you take 10 minutes with them, you give them the materials, you walk them to the edge of the cliff, and you push them off. And he says, they're not afraid, and you get them doing something, the most creative thing they've ever done in their life. And he says, we are going to do this as long as we can get away with it.
That's incredible.
It's powerful stuff. And then that principal took all of the sports trophies out of the front hallway in his high school and filled the trophy case with artwork.
Well,
score one for our side.
Yes.
They'll look nice down there at the center, I think.
Speaking of the center, tell us about the upcoming concert and about your band, the Whippersnappers.
Oh, I love the Whippersnappers. They are all peers of my son, Andre. He introduced me, I suppose, to every single one of them. They're not really all that young anymore, but when they first started playing with me at the Jazz Fest, they were probably in their early, early 30s. And a couple people called them the whippersnappers before I ever left the fairgrounds. And so the name just kind of stuck. But it's my son, Andre, who is a tremendously gifted musician, his bass player in Johnny Sketch, Dave Pomerleau, the great Alex McMurray, who is a phenomenally talented New Orleans musician, Casey McAllister, who does a lot of road work with famous roots rock artists. He plays keyboards in the Whippersnappers. He's a brilliant young musician, guitarist, producer, arranger, does soundtracks, kind of a under-the-radar great musician here in town. And Aurora Nealon, the brilliantly talented, wonderfully impish Aurora Nealon, who is just everybody's favorite human being. And I'm so delighted that she loves to play with the Whippersnappers.
And what will you play?
We will mostly, if not entirely, play my songs, because that's when the Whippersnappers first approached me and said, maybe we should do this more than once a year. They said, we want to do your songs. Oddly, after all these years of being a musician, I had never thought to do just my songs before. And I love the way they interpret them. And I'm going to feature each Whippersnapper. Each one of them will have a chance to sing or shine in some ways.
It sounds like an exciting evening.
For me, it's going to be a very exciting evening. I hope somebody else enjoys it, but I am already enjoying it.
We continue to wish you all the best in your recovery and hope you'll continue to let the music play.
Thank you, Diane. I appreciate that more than you can know.
Save the date. The New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation presents folk guitarist and artist Spencer Boren and the Whippersnappers in concert Saturday, March 9th at the Jazz and Heritage Center, 1225 North Rampart Street. Two sets starting at 8 p.m. Admission is free. That's our show for this week. Major support for Inside the Arts comes from the Hellas Foundation. Additional support comes from Christwood Retirement Community, the Contemporary Arts Center, and the New Orleans Opera Association. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette on Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m., and a shortened edition on Thursday mornings at 8:45 when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.